The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And to inquire, to investigate, to think about, reflect on, what is it that motivates us? What is it that's kind of like the engine behind so many of the things that we do? What's setting the course for the things that we say, things that we do, how we spend our time, how we spend our money, spend our resources? And there's a number of different levels for this, right? One or some, well, I'm motivated just because I don't want to be hungry, or I'm motivated just because I want to feel comfortable. But there's also some of our like deepest aspirations, something that's really deep inside of us that makes our heart sing in some kind of way. It can be helpful to reflect on this on occasion. Just check in with this. What is most important for us? What is some of the most valuable? What is like our North Star? When we have aligned with an aspiration, there's often a feeling of openness or relief or a little bit of ease. Like, yeah, this is what's important for me. This is what's meaningful. This is what is really valuable. As opposed to like wanting something, which has a little bit of a more feeling of like grasping and leaning forward, like, yeah, I want this. As opposed to an aspiration, it feels, there's like a beautiful, kind of a beautiful quality to it. Many of us have a deep wish in our hearts for well-being. We have a deep wish for happiness. Not only for ourselves, but for others, to support others in finding well-being and to support others in finding happiness. This is a beautiful, beautiful wish. Might be a deep wish for service, to support what we feel is most meaningful, not only for us, but for others. And of course, these aspirations can be expressed in so many different ways. And what one person thinks is going to support a sense of happiness for themselves and for others may look completely different than for somebody else. Of course it does. We have different histories, we have different minds, we have different bodies. So there's ways things get expressed are going to be different. So there isn't one right way. There isn't one right aspiration. We all get to find what's meaningful for us. This word aspiration, I've heard one teacher equate it with this Pali word adhitana, which often gets translated as resolve. Like, what do we kind of set our resolve on? And there are four aspirations that the Buddha talked about. I'm not really going to talk about these, but I'm going to just use them to maybe like plant a seed. So these four aspirations are for wisdom, aspiration for truth, aspiration for letting go, as opposed to kind of clinging and grabbing on, but to letting go, opening with some spaciousness, and an aspiration for peace. I personally feel inspired by all of these. And I think so many of us do in some way, right, to have these types of qualities kind of imbue our lives and be part of what our lives are about. Maybe sometimes we're more connected than other times. But whatever our aspiration might be, whatever our deepest wish might be, it's not always so easy, right? It's not so easy to align with it, to behave in a way that is supports it. And that's a little bit more what I want to talk about tonight, is what are some of these qualities that we can cultivate, that we can develop to help us align with our aspirations, to help us achieve them, attain them. Help us to aim in this direction and feel like we're making some, able to include them into our life. So the Buddha outlined the five qualities that we can cultivate to support our reaching our aspirations. And they're listed in a particular order, but just for those of you who are familiar with the Eightfold Path, in the same way that the Eightfold Path are eight qualities that we can work with and bring into our life in any order, but somehow the path is always said in one particular order, and we could say that it describes kind of like a beginning, a middle, and an end. In the same way, the list of these five qualities that help support us, everyone, to reach their aspirations. There are five independent qualities that we can cultivate and develop, but also we can consider that the list in which they are in, they themselves are kind of a path. So what's the first quality? Confidence. Confidence is twofold. One, in that what our aspiration is possible. So, I mean, there's something silly and ridiculous we could think about. It's like, okay, well, maybe I aspire for it to rain chocolate or, you know, something like this, right? So the confidence to kind of help us get connected to things that are actually possible to happen. And in the classic Buddhist teachings, the aspiration that the Buddha was teaching about primarily, right, is how to find freedom, how to find the end of suffering, how to find complete peace. And so this confidence was initial in the classic teachings was talked about that enlightenment is possible. And the Buddha was an exemplar, was somebody who it was demonstrated that it is possible. So that's the first part of confidence, and that that there is something bigger and better that's available to us, something that nourishes and feeds the heart in some kind of way. And then there's a second part of confidence that's not in the Buddhist literature, but for me, I think it's important and worthwhile talking about, and that is we also need confidence in ourselves. We need some confidence that we can do this. Not saying that it's easy, but sometimes it's so tempting to be dismissive, like, yes, I have this heart's desire. It's very meaningful for me, but I can't do it. It's too hard, too complicated, too, I don't know, maybe I'm not even worthy of it. There might be some kind of quiet thoughts, beliefs in the back of our mind in which we don't even begin. We don't even start on these, what our heart's desires are. Some of this shows up as like this inner critic, kind of like this sub-personality that we have inside of us in some kind of way. This quiet voice that's putting us down perhaps, or belittling us, or judging us, or blaming ourselves, nagging at us. Maybe it's this sense of shame for how we are or how we show up. This voice is usually not gentle, has this kind of harshness quality to it that kind of creates this inner environment sometimes that's not one of warmth and caring. And when this inner critic is up and running, it's not always up and running. It's not who we are. It's just a habit that we have, this kind of constellation of thoughts, this constellation of beliefs that sometimes the conditions are such that they arise and they tend to be prevalent and we notice them. But when it's up and running and loud, it just supports this feeling of inadequacy. This feeling like, I can barely do this. How could I follow? It's my deepest aspiration. have this feeling of somehow I'm not enough, or there's so much pain, right, that can be caught up in this. There's so much discomfort that can be caught up in this. And sometimes it's so prevalent, it's hard to even recognize. And it's also common to think like, well, I'm the only one that has this idea. I'm the only one that feels like they don't quite have it all together or aren't quite good enough or whatever it might be. I often see this when I do kind of like group practice discussions, for example. As soon as like one person says, well, I'm actually struggling. I'm having some difficulty. You can often feel a little collective sigh. Yeah, me too. Right? Often there's this sense of we want to show up and look good. Or sometimes, for those of you who have ever been to like a happy hour that we do on Wednesday nights, we do a little kind of like a group discussion. And a big part of it is just for people to recognize this is part of the human condition. It's so prevalent. This idea, maybe like feeling like, okay, maybe I'm not quite enough, or I'm not the way that other people see me. They don't recognize it inside of me. I'm actually really struggling, or I don't have this feeling maybe that I'm worthy, whatever manifestation it might be. So in Happy Hour, we do this, just a small discussion for people to talk to one another. And there's often people reporting like, wow, that was so great. Kind of just to be, just to normalize that experience and stop taking it quite so personally. Because of course we have this self-critic, right? We've learned it from society, from school, from family, you know, sit up straight, eat your broccoli, whatever it might be. We all have different versions of this. And of course, Madison Avenue, right? The advertising, their whole, how many quadrillion, bazillion dollars? I don't know how many, but it's a huge industry, right, to make us feel a little bit inadequate so that then we will want to buy something, right? So one impact that having this inner critic when it's up and running is that instead of connecting to our deepest aspiration, instead of connecting to what's important to us, there's this way this feeling of should comes into practice. I should do this. I should not do that. I should meditate more. I should be more kind. I should go to the gym. I should eat more vegetables, whatever it might be. This feeling of should comes in. And this, when there's a lot of should, instead of this openness and ease that happens when we're aligning with what's important to us, what's meaningful to us, when there's a sense of should, then there's like a sense of pressure. There's a sense of kind of contraction that somehow like blocks or cramps, inhibits, shuts down, maybe even like ends the practice. And then makes parts of our life feel, the ones that are motivated by shoulds, make them feel kind of dry and brittle. Not with some juiciness or some joy or... And it can, when there's a sense of should is really strong, it also doesn't encourage us to ask deep questions, to ask ourselves of, like, is this really what's most important to me? Is this how I want to live my life? There's a strong sense of should or inner critic. We often aren't asking those questions. Many of you may know that in the Buddhist teachings, the first noble truth is one of these key perspectives, perhaps we could use, that Buddhism teaches that the first noble truth is there is suffering. There's difficulties, there's stress, there's dissatisfaction. That's just the way that it is. It's not news to anybody once we say it. But when the inner critic is really loud, instead of saying, wow, okay, here's some suffering, like, what's underneath this? What's promoting it? What can I do to dismantle or work with it? Instead of engaging with it that way, instead it comes up this question of, oh, I must be doing it wrong. Or am I doing it right? Maybe that's the question in the statement is, must be doing it wrong. So an alternative could be, how am I? What's going on with me? What's my experience right now? Connecting back to ourselves in some kind of way. And then we can ask, well, what would be helpful right now? What would be helpful for me to work with this anxiety that I have about this presentation I have to give at work tomorrow? What would be helpful for me to find a little more ease in the body? What would be helpful for me to kind of like quiet this little worrying that I'm doing about somebody I care about? So we can work with this with, by working with the inner critic, we can bring some kindness to our mindfulness practice. If we have a mindfulness practice, sometimes when we have the object, often it's the breath, not always. And then the mind drips away, and then we just very simply come back, right? It's not complicated, this simple practice. Not necessarily easy. But sometimes what happens is when we realize, like, oh, I'm over here, there's this quiet little, dang it, there you are again, come back. There's this kind of little, you know, this quiet little voice kind of chastising ourselves or something. It can be really impactful to practice a little bit of kindness, like a little bit of warmth, like, okay, there it is. Not on the object, that's okay. We don't have to make it a project or a problem. We just begin again, very simply, with some warmth. Something else that we can do is to have a loving kindness practice. For those of you who are familiar with this, that is just to cultivate and train the mind to incline towards warmth, to incline towards care, to incline towards compassion, benevolence, goodwill, love. We can do this in a systematic way with a meditation practice. Even these two things, with mindfulness practice, with some kindness, doing some loving kindness practice, can make a difference in this inner critic. And then when we notice the inner critic is there, we can just recognize, oh, here it is again. And maybe just notice, allow it to be there. We don't want to like throw aversion at it. Just say, oh, okay, here's the inner critic speaking up again. Maybe we can have some kindness for that. We have this inner critic, it's perfectly legitimate that it's there. It's in the sense that it's only there because we've been socialized in certain ways. We've learned certain things. It's trying to protect us. It's trying to keep us safe. It's like, okay, here it is. And just that recognition and allowing with a little bit of warmth, those three things, world of difference. We'll make a world of difference. I'm not saying this is easy, and I'm not saying that we'll be able to do it every time, but just these are three things that we can do that when we start to notice this inner critic. So confidence in ourselves, and confidence that our aspiration is even possible is the first quality that can help us to reach our aspirations. The second is health and well-being as best we can. Right. So that doesn't mean that we have to be Olympic athletes, you know, in the epitome of health. And the classic Buddhist teachings, they talk about health in terms of having a good enough digestion. Not too warm, not too cool, but just right. Like the word in Pali is like, but middle way, like the middle digestion. In such a way that allows one to meditate or to practice, maybe perhaps in whatever way is appropriate. So it's not asking for perfect health, but it is acknowledging that, of course, if we are really ill, if we have that's pressing on us, right? If we are not really, that our capacities are diminished when we are sick. And I somehow feel buoyed by this, because sometimes we can hear all these idealized teachings and think that we should be able to apply them all the time. But here's a real acknowledgement that no, our health matters. Of course it does. Of course it does. And it's worthwhile for us to pay attention to it and to take care of it as best we can. So one way that we can take care of our health and our well-being is to work towards balance, recognizing, right, that it's not so easy, right, to have things in balance. And I've heard this saying sometimes, that we only know balance is possible because we notice it as we swing past it, going from one way to the other. But to have this be a part of the priority for our life, that is, just have this inquiry. Do we have some balance between work and play? Do we have some creativity in our lives? Maybe that's how play shows up. Do we have a balance of time alone and time with others? Do we have a balance of exercise and rest? And do we have a balance that, in terms of busyness, do we have some time if we have identified that we would like to do something that's important for us? Is there space in our life to do that? So that's the second factor of things that can support us in achieving or aiming towards our aspirations. To have some health and well-being, and to take care of that, pay attention to it in whatever way is appropriate for us. The third is to be honest and sincere. And classically in the Buddhist teachings, this shows up as showing oneself as oneself actually is to their teacher and to the fellow practitioners. So to not be hiding oneself, and not to be deceiving about oneself, or even be too deceitful. There's, as I kind of mentioned earlier about this idea of the inner critic, there can be a lot of pressure to only show the best sides of ourselves. And maybe that's appropriate in certain situations, in our professional situations, and when we're not... and maybe with people we don't know well. But it can be enormously helpful, right, to have some individuals, one individual, that we share a little bit. That we share something about what's going on with us. So this points to the value of having other people in our lives, in our practice lives, the value of having a sangha of people who come together and practice together and who know about meditation, and to, as best we can, create the conditions so that we do have places in our life where we can share what's going on. Maybe it's not everything, but to share some things. But not only to be honest and sincere with others, but I will also add, to be honest and sincere with ourselves. a big part of mindfulness practice is to see oneself clearly, to understand ourselves. And maybe that's to include, see like, oh, okay, I have this aspiration that's really important to me, but I'm noticing that I'm spending so much of my energy and my time doing this thing over here, which really doesn't support what's most important for me. It can be painful to see something like this. It can be difficult to see how sometimes what we're doing isn't what we wish that we were doing, or what is perhaps what is most important for us. I think, I forget where I heard this, but it certainly has been true for me that I heard this, that, let's see, how does this go? It goes something like this. Greater self-understanding is rarely good news. We're just like, oh, you know, we have these idealized versions of ourselves. And then when we start to meditate and we start to see, like, oh, yeah, okay, there was a little bit of a flavor of ill will there. I didn't realize it, but I was irritated and I allowed that to leak out of me or something like this. Sometimes if we aren't paying attention to ourselves, these things just pass by and we don't notice. This idea of being honest and sincere includes just to learn, notice what our habits are, notice what are the things that we tend to do that maybe aren't so helpful, maybe aren't so helpful for ourselves and aren't so helpful for others. Also to be honest and sincere with ourselves, to inquire, well, what is motivating us if it's not our highest aspirations? What is behind some of the things that we do? Yeah, and this importance of, I'll bring back this idea of, you know, confidence too. Or this could be fodder for this inner critic. But instead, to as best we can, to have some warmth and to have some care for ourselves and for the discoveries that we make about ourselves. One big giant advantage of being honest and sincere with ourselves, it starts to become evident, like, okay, here's some areas that I think it's going to be worthwhile for me to look at, to pay some attention to, some qualities that I want to develop that'll make it easier for me to reach my aspiration, make it more likely, help create the conditions for that. So that we can help identify, like, what needs to be developed, qualities or capacities, capabilities. And that leads us to the fourth quality to help us reach our aspiration, and that is to have enough energy for giving up those things that aren't supportive, aren't helpful, and to have enough energy for taking up those things that are helpful, skillful, wholesome, and that will support us tapping into our aspirations. So having enough energy. So classically, this gets defined kind of as being steadfast, launching one's effort with firmness and persevering. I like this idea of launching one's efforts with firmness. It's not in my usual language, but it's kind of like this idea of like having some resolve, having some diligence, having some perseverance as best we can. Be careful with this inner critic too, right? So we just notice when we are feeling uninspired and aren't putting forth some effort, aren't putting forth some energy towards what's important to us. So in the Buddhist teachings, there's this simile of the goldsmith that points to this idea of putting effort towards what we want to achieve, putting some effort towards what we would like to do. And it goes like this. Suppose a goldsmith would prepare a hot furnace, heat up a receptacle, take some gold using tongs, and put the gold into the receptacle. Then, from time to time, the goldsmith would blow on it. From time to time, the goldsmith would sprinkle water on it. And from time to time, the goldsmith would just look on as the gold was heating. If the goldsmith were to only blow on it, it's possible that the gold would just burn up. If the goldsmith were to only sprinkle water on it, it's possible the gold would cool down. If the goldsmith were to only just look on, it's possible the gold would not reach the right consistency. But if the goldsmith would, from time to time, blow on it, from time to time sprinkle water on it, and from time to time just look on, the gold would become purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, attained to imperturbability, then whatever ornament the goldsmith wishes to make from it, whether a bracelet, earrings, a necklace, or a garland, that can be achieved. So this idea, sometimes just look on is what's needed. That's kind of like the energy that's needed to just pay attention. Sometimes to blow on it, maybe that's a little bit more effortful. And to sprinkle water, maybe that's to bring in tools, kind of my interpretations. But this idea of to bring energy isn't just about pushing and striving. Often we can have this idea that in order to achieve what we want to do, we have to do whatever we're already doing, just harder. But this is pointing to there's so many different ways in which energy can be brought to making something that can be shaped, can be created. So this importance of balancing our energy. Because we all have to apply some energy. I have to apply some effort to whatever it is that's important to us. And of course, the Buddhist teachings, like the practices are offered to us, but we're the ones that have to do them. There can't be any Shazam moment where the Buddha is going to just make it happen for us. Of course, we have to roll up our sleeves in some kind of way. But a big part of practice is to figure out, well, what does that mean to roll up one's sleeves? What does it mean to apply a little bit of effort? How can we do that in a way that is sustainable, that makes sense for our life, that makes sense for who we are, and makes sense for what's happening at that moment in our life? We have human bodies, we have human minds, we don't have limitless energy. We don't have effort that is unstoppable, that can go on infinitely. So part of the practice, a big part of the practice, is to learn how to apply it in a way, in a balanced way, in an easy way that makes sense for us. And Sayadaw Tejaniya has this example of just having this with two hands touching and noticing what's the effort, how much energy is required in the mind. You can do this, just touch your hands. How much energy does it take to notice that? It doesn't take a lot. We don't have to like slam our attention onto the sensation, but just to feel it. Sometimes that's the effort that's needed, all the effort. Just to be present for what's happening. Maybe that's all that's required. And sometime, if we're paying attention to what's happening, then we will notice those things that we're doing that are uncomfortable, that are causing more suffering, that are not leading us the direction to where we want to go. That being said, there may be some things that are uncomfortable but are on the way to where we want to go, of course, right? Just like if we want to be able to lift more weight, go to the gym, and it's uncomfortable to lift heavier and heavier weights, but there's benefits from that. So part of our practice is to notice what is the uncomfortableness that's worthwhile to persevere with? What's the uncomfortableness that's a signal that we're going in the wrong direction somehow? And so this fourth quality is having the energy for letting go, abandoning those things that aren't helpful, and picking up and cultivating those things that are helpful. And of course, this implies, suggests, requires that we have some idea of what's helpful and what's not helpful, what's going to help support us towards our aspiration. We don't always know. That's okay. We learn as we go. We figure it out. It becomes evident to us, like, wow, I was pretty sure that this was going to lead to happiness, but it turned out to be a dead end. Yeah, I had a lot more pleasure, but pleasure is not really the same thing as happiness. But sometimes we need to make that discovery for ourselves. Sometimes just being told something just, you know, is not sufficient. We have to have these learnings for ourselves. And then this fifth quality to help support us to reach our aspiration is to have the wisdom that recognizes insights. To have insights and to recognize them as such. And classically, this is talked about by seeing impermanence, seeing that things arise and pass away, seeing that things come and go, they're inconstant, they end, some things begin, some things end. To be sure, everything ends. And so this seeing impermanence is highlighted for a number of reasons, but one is when we understand that things are inconstant, then we don't hold on to them so tightly. We don't hold on to our experiences, we don't hold on to our beliefs, we don't hold on to our objects, our possessions, any of these things. When we start to realize that, oh yeah, these aren't as reliable as we might hope that they are. So if we were thinking that our deepest aspirations, we were going to rely on particular objects or rely on particular situations, when we start to notice the impermanence of things, we become less apt to want to just rely on them and maybe to dig deep inside ourselves and to find what is it, what's in our hearts, what's inside ourselves that supports us, that's perhaps a little more reliable, that is nourishing, that provides some fuel for all the goodness that we have, provides some fuel for us to support others in whatever way that we might, in a way that's meaningful for us. And to be sure, this lessening of clinging, because we're recognizing impermanence, this lessening of clinging leads to a lessening of suffering. Clinging always leads to suffering in some kind of way. When there's less suffering, then it's easier to see what's happening. It's easier to see what would be helpful, what would be supportive to do. So in this way, the Buddha offered these five qualities, five aspects, five elements, five factors to help us reach our aspirations. One is to have confidence. Two is some health and well-being to take care of that. Three, to be honest and sincere with others and with ourselves. Four, having energy for giving up unskillful qualities and taking up skillful qualities. And five, to recognize insights, use them as wisdom, and in particular this insight of impermanence. So I think I'll stop there and open it up and see if there are some questions or comments.
There were a few things, well, there are many things that hit home with this, but this morning, I usually start my work early before my self-critic wakes up. Nice. So that you know, I don't equivocate early in the morning, but this morning, that auxiliary audio tract was on in my head, and it's been so long where it's like telling me and sniping at me, and it was like, where did you come from? And it was such a surprise to see it that I was almost glad to see it. It was like, oh, look, you know, it's like having a bad cat. Oh, that's where you've been hiding. You know, it was like, oh, and it's like, I watched it and it was like, oh, and it goes away. And that was, I thought, oh, you gave a word to it. That's the impermanence part of it. Whereas it was like, oh, I was lucky enough to see it and I was taking it seriously. And it was like, damn, you tricked me. Mm. You're like doing that thing you do, you know, and it eventually cut it out. Nice. And it just fit in beautifully with what you were saying.
Nice. Yeah, when it shows up, it can sometimes feel very authoritative. Like, this is the truth. Because we've heard it so many times, somehow we think it's the truth. Or it can be persuasive. Yeah. I like this, Maureen, about the bad cat. That's cute. I'm going to remember that. Thank you.
So I'm just thinking, impermanence and confidence have some conflicts with each other in a way that confidence is the belief in yourself. So I believe my action, for example, I love someone, I want this relationship to last a long time. So I'm confident that I can guard it, I can put efforts into it. But at the same time, it's impermanent. So I need to understand it will end someday. So if I lean more towards impermanence, I will feel more passive and feel like my action doesn't matter, it's going to end no matter what. But if I lean towards confidence, I will be more clingy to it, which you mentioned, it's also not letting go. So this like back and forth is happening.
Yeah. So can you say a little bit more why with impermanence you would be a little bit more passive? Well, what's the link there?
It's like it's gonna end anyway, why do I try? Like, that's my logic.
Mm. Yeah. But you know, there's also, right, sometimes when people, I'll just use this as an example, before they know they're gonna die, they have a diagnosis and they know they're gonna die soon, right, then they often are leaning in, telling everybody how much they love them, and how they're doing things that are really meaningful to them. Often when we know things that are gonna slip away, that we can't control them. The relationships, we wish that we could, right? But we don't get to control them as much as perhaps we would wish. There can also be a sense of the beauty and the poignancy, like, okay, well, this is here now. I'm going to appreciate this now. I don't know. I wish it were here tomorrow, and I'm going to create the conditions, I'm going to do what I can to promote this, but we don't know. So it can also promote the opposite.
Yeah, it does. It does make sense, yeah.
Can we... Related to that, clinging is bad. However, when you have goals, you need discipline and stick-to-itiveness to achieve those goals. So how do you balance non-attachment and non-clinginess and yet still have the discipline and kind of a little bit of a investment in something that you want to happen in the future?
Yeah. So there can be a way in which you do... For me, it feels a little bit like this. It's like between, like, I'm going to do this because I want this particular outcome and I hate this, but I'm going to do it anyway, as opposed to, I'm going to do this because it's the right next thing to do. I'm going to do this because it makes sense to me to move along this path or this project that I want to do. And we give ourselves over to it in the moment, like, okay, I'm going to do this. As opposed to this, maybe I'm going like this with my fist, right? An attitude. So the difference maybe is in the attitude of, like, I'm holding on for, we're white knuckling it as a way.
But not tenacity. So tenacity.
Oh, tenacity. We need tenacity, of course, right? How are we going to move through life if we don't have some stick-to-itiveness? Clinging, I'm defining as, I'm going like this with my hand. It's like holding on so tightly, even though the thing is wiggling and moving, and where it's the difference. I think Gil sometimes does this demonstration, which I kind of like. So one is right here, this bowl. If I hold on to it tightly, and I use the striker, right? It doesn't, as opposed like this, right? So to still be using the striker, but to be using it in such a way that it's not like holding on so quick.
So I used to be super into goals and achievement, that whole, like, hamster wheel. I think if you're clinging to it, all you can see is the goal. But, like, what you just described, it's like you have your own value and you're, like, value-driven. You won't be, like, consumed by the goal just for the sake of better future. Or, like, also, like, If you're trying to achieve these things for a better future, you're not living in the present.
That's right. Like,
yeah, these are my takeaways.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. It's very nice.
So, at the very beginning of the talk, you talked about what motivates us. And you listed a few things, and one of them was peace. And I thought, oh yeah, that's mine. And then I realized, no. What I really am motivated by is keeping everything pleasant. So pleasant in the relationships, pleasant at work, and so just going from one pleasant experience to another, which seems really superficial. And if you have any ideas about how, I don't know, what I can look differently at to maybe be more motivated by peace instead of pleasantness.
Yeah, this is something, sometimes we can drop this in during meditation. Like, what is important. Well, what's my heart's wish? What's my deepest desire? And drop in the question, not with the expectation that there will be an answer, but something happens sometimes when we drop those questions. There might be an answer, might bubble up, but also it just might start to become clear. Maybe not the first time you do this during meditation, maybe not the second time, not the third time. So it's important to do it with kind of a spirit of curiosity and looking as best you can. So that's one idea. The second idea is to do automatic writing. That is to say, what's most important to me? And you set the timer for, I forget how many minutes, let's just say 5 minutes. You're not allowed to put down the pen. And it's important to do this with pen and paper, not the keyboard. There's a little bit difference when we have pen and paper. And just to keep on writing. And if you don't know what to write, you say, what's my deepest desire? I don't know, this is crazy. I really have to write for 5 minutes and it's only been 2 seconds now. I'm going to keep on writing. Okay, well, I guess I thought it was pleasantness, but now it's not pleasantness. And just keep on writing and writing and writing. And then certain things can come up. So these are two different ways to kind of like maybe tap into something that's deep inside of us. And to allow them to show themselves.
So just sit with that.
Yeah, yeah. It's important work. It's not so easy, but this can be really important for us to tap into. It helps us to lead a life that's meaningful and fulfilling. Okay, so it's 9:00. So I want to thank you all and wish you all a wonderful evening. Thank you.